We're delighted to have Ed Frohlich as our guest today, who he and I were on the big league beat together for many, many years, and he still maintains his interest in sports. You know, Ed, whenever I see you, I think about a late and very dear friend of ours, the late Joe McCarthy, who you loved and I loved, and I can remember when the Cubs fired Joe McCarthy many, many years ago. That was probably the biggest mistake they ever made.
Well, I think, Bob, the whole history of baseball would have been changed if he had stayed with the Cubs, because he had built a juggernaut there. And the proof of it is that the team went on the momentum that he had created for another 7 or 8 years. And I think that the Cubs probably would have won as many pennants as the Yankees if he had stayed with the Cubs. They went from after he left, you know, they still had Billy Gergis and Billy Herman and Stan Hack and Cavaretta and Bill Lee and Warnicki and Frank Demery and Augie Galland. You know, they still, 8 years after he left, they were still a respectable team playing the Yankees in the World Series. So it just, what I'm saying proves that if he had stayed with the Cubs, they would have won as many pennants as the Yankees did through all those years.
Well, I was fortunate in that I know Joe McCarthy. I knew Joe McCarthy very well and really valued his friendship. He was the kind of a guy that I would have hesitated to walk up and talk to him about anything but baseball.
Well, that's true. What you said there is true, because he lived it and slept it and ate it and drank it. And I know every once in a while he would be in his room maybe at 2 o'clock in the morning, and he would be talking about it, and he'd say, "Isn't this something? Here I am, laying awake at night, trying to figure out how to make Bill Zuber a 20-game winner, and he's been asleep for 6 hours." But that was the way he was. He would be concerned about things like that.
Do you happen to know whatever brought about McCarthy's departure from the Cubs, which was a sad, sad occasion?
Yes, I know the story, Bob, and it was after the 1929 World Series, and Mr. Wrigley, William Wrigley Jr., was coming back on a train and having dinner with Irving Vaughn of the Tribune, and a chance remark that he made in a fit of discouragement, he said, "Someday maybe I'll have a manager here that will win a World Series for me instead of losing it." And the remark was all forgotten about until the next year, going down the wire with all kinds of misfortune. The Cubs still only lost a pennant by a game and a half. But Vaughn, looking for a story, had a meeting with Mr. Wrigley, and he opened that remark up again. He said, "Do you still feel the way you felt coming back from Philadelphia?" And he had backed Mr. Wrigley into a corner and more or less forced him to make a move. And Mr. Wrigley, when Joe McCarthy was leaving, told him, he said, "Joe," he said, "I know I'm doing this against my better judgment. I shouldn't be doing it." And he gave him 10,000 shares of Wrigley stock as a going away gift.
Oh, that was a pretty nice, that was a pretty nice gift.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Well, McCarthy was a remarkable man. When I'm talking to you about him, I can see him just like it was yesterday. Sitting there, he was always a dignified sort of.
Oh, yeah, and humble, Bob, just as humble as he could be. I used to see him once in a while. The team would get off the train or the plane, and everybody would get in the taxi cabs. We didn't have buses then. Everybody would get in the taxi cabs, and they'd get to the hotel. Everybody would storm the desk, you know, for their keys and their mail and so forth, checking in. And he would back off into a corner and wait until everybody on the club was roomed. And then he'd very casually walk up to the desk and he'd say, "Do you have a key there for Jay McCarthy?" He's the manager of the New York Yankees, and he's asking, do you have a key? Very humble, very humble. "Do you have a key there for Jay McCarthy? Jay McCarthy," like as if he's a shoe salesman or something.
Well, it was too bad that he ever left Chicago. I can just see, because the Cubs had a powerhouse ball club when he left here.
You know, he used to talk about how blasé New York was. And he said he remembered winning four straight World Championships, and he said he got off the train in Grand Central Station and wound up carrying his own bags to a taxi cab. He couldn't find a red cab. And he said, I'll tell you how much commotion we caused. He said, there was a little cluster of about 50 fans that had gotten around the gate. He said, there couldn't have been more than 50. And he said, some fella walked by him. He said he put his bags down for a rest. And he said, some fella walked by him. And he looked at the gate and he said, what is that going on over there? He said, is that some convention group or something? And McCarthy said, yeah, he said, I guess it is. And he said the next year they lost to the Tigers. And he went to Detroit with Ed Barrow, and they had a big celebration. The town was all lit up with American flags and parades and everything. And he told Barrow, he said, now, he said, look at this. Isn't this great? He said, here we are. He said, we won four straight World Championships in New York, and he said, nothing. He said, I couldn't even find a red cap. He said, we didn't have anything like this. And Barrow said, yeah. He said, you know, Joe, I talked to Mayor LaGuardia about it, and LaGuardia told me that if we had won one more, he would give us a parade.
Oh, those were fantastic days. I told you about that story about I knew Barrow and Rupert well and, of course, McCarthy very well. And a guy came in to see Colonel Barrow one day. And Barrow on the phone said to the girl, what's his business? And she said, well, he's talking about, he's representing somebody. He says, oh, Barrow was impatient. He says, send him in. Well, the guy came in. So Barrow said to him, what's your business? He said, well, I'm an agent for so-and-so. And Barrow said to him, why, can't he talk for himself? He says, yes, but he says, I'm his agent. He says, well, when you can play center field as good as he can, you come back and see me.
That was no less, Bob, than Joe Gould. Joe Gould, who was the manager of Jimmy Braddock at the time, the world's heavyweight champion, and he had gotten friendly with DiMaggio, and he told DiMaggio that he thought that he could get him more money than he was able to negotiate for himself. And he came in, and Barrow said, what's on your mind? He said, I'm here to negotiate for DiMaggio. And he said, when you play center field, I'll negotiate with you. He said, until then, I'll negotiate with DiMaggio. Good day.
Yeah, Rupert and Barrow, they were really a pair, weren't they?
Oh, my God. Rizzuto was something. He told a story about he came in to see Barrow after he had had the greatest year anybody could possibly have in the minor leagues. And he said Barrow was being shaved. His head was back and his face was all full of lather. And Paul Critchell had brought him into the room. And he never even looked up. He never even faced him. He spoke to that big face full of lather and he said to Rizzuto, what's on your mind? Rizzuto said, Mr. Barrow, he said, I thought I would probably be worth more money. And Barrow said, get out of here. He said, you make good in the big leagues first and then come in and talk to me. He had gotten a contract for $5,000 and he thought he was worth more, which he was.
Yeah. No.
But Barrow said, make good first and then come in and talk to me. Rizzuto said, I went back outside into the cold.
Well, times have really changed. Conditions have changed, times have changed. Actually, today the ball players almost dictate what goes on today in baseball.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why you have situations like you have today, Bob, is that, well, you have free agency, and you have grievances, and you have the players' organization, you have all these things that create the situation you have today. And I don't think it's good. I say some of it might be good, but a lot of it isn't good, because you have to have discipline. You have to have discipline. I can remember McCarthy on more than one occasion. Somebody would come to the Yankees and they'd get a few headlines and they would think that they were big stuff. And McCarthy would get the fellow aside and he'd say, I want to tell you something, young fellow. The Yankees can do a lot for you. But there isn't anything that you can do for the Yankees that somebody else can't do just as well and maybe better. and then he would close his conversation by saying, "Think it over," like as if there was anything to think over.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is a former big league trainer, Ed Frohlich. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is Ed Frohlich, former trainer in the big leagues for many, many years. Ed, you read and you hear underground and so on about the use of stimulants in sports today. By stimulants, what do they mean, and is it widespread?
Yes, I think, Bob, it's unfortunate that it probably is widespread, and some of it puzzles me. I would say this, that there is a reason, a time, a place for everything. Now, I would say that a ball club, let's say going down the wire, the last week of the season, you're trying to make it to the pennant, and then you get into the World Series. And I would say that in that last week, during the World Series, I say go for broke. It's fine. Anything you do, anything you use, great. Because there's no harm can come from it. The season is over. But the problem comes in when people start doing that, let's say, in May. Now, where are you going? You know, you're going the suicide route. You got May, June, July, August, September. You're going to take stimulants all that length of time? You got to wind up going bad. You know, you're going down the tube. So this is where the problem comes in, guys. It's not the use. It's the abuse of stimulants that causes the problem. There's a reason for it. The big reason is that today, money, money, money. The players want money. So the owners have to try and compensate for it by, we all know, the bad schedule. You remember when night games first started out, Bob? You played a night game and the next day was off. Remember that? It was an off day. And there was only 14 night games that were permitted. Today, play as many night games as you want to. You play at night, you get home, maybe it's 4 o'clock in the morning. The next day, you're out playing a game. You maybe had 4 hours sleep. Obviously, you can't play a good game, Bob. There's going to be a winner, there's going to be a loser, but naturally, you've missed sleep, so you're dead. And you're still in baseball, as I was, play a night game Friday night, and you're back out there 4 or 5 hours later, you play a day game in the heat, and then you play a doubleheader on Sunday, and then you go to the airport, and you get on a plane, and you look at your clock. By the time you get to Los Angeles from New York, and you have gone around the clock 24 hours, and now, jet lag or no jet lag, you're playing another game. How good a game can you play that night? See, you can't. You can't. So it comes down to where a player says, well, if I take something to juice me up a little bit, maybe that'll help. But in the early season, in the middle of the season, it's the wrong thing to do, because sooner or later, it's going to catch up with you. You can only use stimulants at the right time. You can use them, say, for example, a football player can use them because he's only playing one game a week. And if he's smart, he gets by. Hockey player, he's more or less in the same shoes that a baseball player is. You can't start doing it early in the season. The same way with basketball. You can't start doing it early in the season.
Doc, what about some of the great pitchers that you work with? What about a guy like, who was always a great favorite of mine, Allie Reynolds? Allie Reynolds maintained that Jackie Robinson never got a foul ball off of him. I don't know why.
Reynolds was a great pitcher. And it kind of ties in with what we're talking about. When he came to the Yankees, the first couple of times that he pitched for us, he ran out of gas in the late innings, in the eighth and ninth inning. And we couldn't figure out why. And so finally we sent him to the hospital and had a complete blood chemistry done on him. And it turned out that he had a low blood sugar level. And so from that point on, every time he pitched, I would always have 2 thermos bottles full of fresh orange juice laced with a lot of honey in it. And we would start giving it to him from about the third inning on. And this went along fine. He then became a real strong 9-inning pitcher. He'd be fogging that ball in the 9th inning. It was just simply a matter of a chemistry thing. But there's a kind of a funny story involved in that. We had Dressen on the club at the time, and Dressen was one of those old guys who was a throwback to the old days when if a pitcher ran out of gas in the late innings, he gave him a shot of booze. So one day he got the bright idea of taking one of these thermos bottles, and he laced it pretty good with brandy, cognac. Unknown to me, unknown to Reynolds, he thought he was being real smart. He took the thermos bottle inside and gave it a real good jolt, spiked it with brandy. And Reynolds grabbed the big slug of this stuff just before he went on the mound. He took his warm-up pitch, his pitch to the first hitter, and then all of a sudden he's glaring into the dugout. And Dressen knew what had happened. This stuff had hit him. You know, when you're hot, alcohol will hit you quick. And so Dressen took a powder. He said, "I'm going in the clubhouse." He said, "I've got the runs." And when the inning was over, Reynolds said to me, "Who spiked that orange juice?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "Well, when you find out, if you find out," he said, "you tell him if he ever does anything like that again," he said, "I'll shove that thermos bottle right down his throat." He said, "Tell him you don't give fire water to an Indian."
Reynolds was really something. I guess he was just as about a... He used to brag about the fact that Jackie Robinson, who was a great ball player and a great hitter, as you know, he never had much luck with Reynolds.
I'll tell you one day when he really impressed me. It was his first year with the club. And he had pitched the day before, and he lost to Neuhauser 2-1 in 12 innings. And we're in another tight ball game. Now this day we're winning 2-1. And he gave me a little nudge, and he said, "Come on down the tunnel for a minute." So I came down the tunnel with him, and he said, "Go up there and grab a handful of hot stuff," he said, "and slap it on my shoulder." He said, "I want to go down the bullpen and see if I can get loose. I might be able to pitch to one or two right-hand hitters." And I said, "Can you do it?" He said, "I'll try." So I did it, and he took a quick powder down to the bullpen, and all of a sudden, just the way it happened, we got in trouble. And he was in the bullpen, and Bucky Harris turned around, and he said, "Where's Reynolds?" He said, "I want to ask him if he can go down and loosen up and pitch to a hitter or two." I said, "He's already there." I said, "He's in the bullpen throwing." And Harris looked at me and he said, "How do you find guys like that?" He said, "And no wonder this club keeps right on winning." Here he was down there on his own, Bob. And, the most remarkable thing about it was that he had lost the day before. You know, now if he had won the day before, you know, you're juiced up, you want to do things like that. He lost 2-1, and he's down there volunteering on his own. Nobody asked him. That's...
Doc, do you think that attitudes have changed a great deal on the part of players today? Has the big money made a change in attitudes?
I think so, Bob. I had a conversation with a coach on the Dodgers a couple of years ago, and they were talking about the change. They said, you know, years ago, we used to fight like the Dickens to win a pennant, to get $6,000 in the World Series. Today, ballplayers are making $300,000, $400,000. What incentive is it to pick up another $25,000 in the World Series? It's just money that's going to be tax money anyway. Sure, you have fellows who have a lot of pride today like you did then. You know, they have pride, and they go out there and... giving a good performance is the most important thing in their life. But, you know, the money factor is bound to make a difference to a player. You know, if you've got a lot of money and you're not hungry for that $6,000, it's going to make a difference in how you perform.
Yeah.
Bound to.
Yeah, that makes sense. I wish we had more time, Doc. I had a lot of things I'd like to talk to you about. 20 minutes goes by real fast when you got an interesting guest. But thanks for taking the time and the trouble to be with me.
Nice to be with you, Bob.
Our guest today has been Ed Frulich, former trainer in the big leagues for many, many years, and a real good one. Have a nice day. Remember, there are a lot of action today on television, a lot of football, and the Bears will be, of course, at home tomorrow. So have a nice weekend, and now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Saturday at our usual time.